I am Brother Cornell West, and this is
If I Can Save America.
Peace and love, everybody. It's your man, Manny Faces. Just wanted to let you know that Hip Hop Can Save America is now available as a live stream show every Monday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time on YouTube. You can find it at hiphopcansaveamerica.com/watch. Excerpts from that show will be played here on the audio feed, so you'll still get the good interviews that you've been used to. But check out the live stream and check out my free Substack newsletter at mannyfaces.substack.com. That's filled with all kinds of stories of hip-hop innovation, inspiration, and generally hip-hop news that isn't about dumb shit. For everything Hip Hop Can Save America, hiphopcansaveamerica.com. For everything Manny Faces, mannyfaces.com. And if you find value in this work, you can support it. We'd love to have you aboard as a supporter at patreon.com/mannyfaces. Now let's go. Ah, all right, there you go. See, man, Manny Faces, like it says on the screen, we are here to talk about artivism. What is that? Art and activism. You know what it is. Y'all know how to do words. And education with my man. Let's get into it. Why should I keep y'all waiting? I don't have anything else to share with you. And we got people that are tuned in and turned up. So why don't we switch to this? And I introduce my friend Y to the screen. What up, brother?
Peace, Manny. Thank you for having me. Appreciate you, fam.
I appreciate you. I'm glad we're able to work it out. How are you feeling tonight?
Yeah, I'm good. I've watched the show several times in different stages and faces. So congratulations to you for just constantly evolving, which is, I think, very part of the hip hop pedagogy and, you know, the way of life.
Yes, indeed.
Feelings. Yeah.
And indeed, man. Evolution, right? Evolution, revolution, facts, all that stuff.
Big facts.
I appreciate it. For the folks that are, you know, unfamiliar with who you are and your work, I don't like reading the bio because if you're like me, it changes from the day I wrote it and then there's something new to it yesterday and tomorrow and it'll be flipping around. So how do you like to present yourself to the world in your words?
Yeah, man. I use that word, the artivism, because, you know, before I was just a slasher, I was like, oh, audio engineer, producer, this and this and that. And I was like, how do I sum it up? And then when I got into like reading a lot of the things from like Paulo Freire and just seeing the connection between interdisciplinary, multidisciplinary art form, I was like, wow. And, you know, for me, activism ain't got nothing to do with politics. Ironically, it just has to do with activating your organism to its highest. And by doing that, you end up doing something for other people. You strive to, you know, you start out painting for the love, but then eventually you want to show somebody that painting. Then you want to paint something for somebody. I think it's a natural process. So for me, it's always been intertwined. I never really knew how to separate the two, but it's just artivism is the one word I got. But, you know, to be literal for people who don't know, my route started out with poetry. My pops, you know, he was a published poet. He was in, I'm from Jamaica, Queens, Southside.
That's right. Queens get the money. Yeah. Let's go.
So I was
Q-Burrow, Matt Thurrow.
Yeah, my mom worked in the Coliseum when they were shooting the Wu-Tang video. So it was just life. I didn't really know it as hip hop, you know, it's just life because the sound systems, the music and the culture was there. And just growing up by Jamaica Ave and that, it was omnipresent, you know.
Yeah.
I saw Clue selling mixtape when I was a kid. So I was just immersed in it. But yeah, the trajectory after that, the first thing I did was just kind of, I was writing rhymes. It started out, I got introduced to poetry. So I always say the first four bars I learned was the alphabet. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, and Z. People don't know that's four bars right there.
So like, amen. That's
it's
right.
It's not rhythm. So when you could put something to rhythm, you know, I did a lot of that as a kid. And then eventually just being inspired around the neighborhood and hearing people play beats. I'm from the era where they used to cipher. So I used to just see people ciphering on Jamaica Ave. And it was like, it was regular. So one day I just kind of was in a cipher, just nodding my head like crazy. And then somebody was like a beatboxer was like, like go in. And then I was like no words. It was nonverbal. And that's what I think was really special. And then he just kept going like until I went. And I ended up just saying something that shut the joint down. And I was like, wow, I didn't know that like I could get a reaction like that. And then, you know, at the time, rest in peace, Fat Beats on 8th Street. I started going to get records at Fat Beats, seeing the ciphers. And then that led me to like the independent hip hop scene, going to the shows, the dub and all of that. Shout out to EO Dub and
the New York City Yeah, Majesty, of course. Scene. Yeah, the New York scene that people don't know about. Obviously, you know, I covered when I ran Birthplace magazine for a long period of time. Those institutions in New York City hip hop that even though the industry had moved to, its attention to, for good reason, Houston, Atlanta, and these other places that were popping. Yep. There was this underground, independent, not even underground to like the point where if people think underground, they say it's a bad word sometimes, like underground, like we don't know who you are. No, this was an independent scene with a thriving ecosystem, movements that were happening. Yes. You were writing the EO Dub, Freestyle Mondays, The Lesson, all that stuff.
Exactly.
Like, just tell folks about that real quick. About that scene real quick.
For
your experience culture. in that scene, rather.
Yes, it's a New York City culture thing. So as a Queens cat, I was by the ENJ, sat out to Suffin Boulevard. And then, I started looking for the records. Right? I remember I was looking for like, where can I get these records? Listening to Underground Radio at the time, the Bobbito Show and those things. I was like, man, this is below, before I thought like the Lox was underground, I started hearing all this other stuff. I was like, yo, what's up? And then I looked where I could find the records, and then that led me to Fat Beats. And Fat Beats used to have all the flyers.
Sure.
Spot. Shout out to DJ Eclipse.
Of course.
Yeah.
Then Brown Bag All Stars, Brown Bag Footwork
I just would grab
the lineup.
Yeah. I would grab every flyer. I would go home and get some bud at Lifetime on the bottom. Maybe it was $10. And then I would just go to whatever was there. And then, I just started rocking open mics strictly off the top first. And then I noticed, I was like, oh shit, they got CDs. They got this, they got that. This venue's connected. This cat that I saw spitting the same song. Oh wow, they got recordings. How do I get recordings? And it's like, you start to follow the rabbit hole. So for me, going to the venues, particularly the Lower East Side at the time, Lower Manhattan was where the hub was.
Right.
And then started going to the steps of Union Square. And then when I got into what was called cypher culture, you want to come to this Red Lion Cafe, boom, 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 right. Sullivan Hall, the venues, the old Knitting Factory in downtown before it crossed over to Brooklyn. And then, I just started going to everything. And because I'm from Jamaica, I used to have to take that train ride like an hour.
Long,
so I was like,
it's a long train ride.
I got to do something on that ride.
Right.
So I would always read a book. I'd always write a song. And I developed like a real good memory. I just had ability. So I would just remember something and then I would go in. And my whole point with the freestyle, I don't do so much of, there's Manny Faces, he's got the hat, let's bring it right back. I would always try to make it like a song, like hat on my head, you heard what I said, it disappeared before the moment I was dead. I always wanted it to sound like a written.
Right.
And because I didn't know, I used to just strive to make it look like a song and feel like a song. And then a DJ friend of mine, shout out to Kwame, he basically saw what I was doing and he was like, dude, you're on another level. And he said, I want you to come to New Lots in Brooklyn. And he's like, I want to record you. And I was like, all right. Now, at the time, CDs was out, but he took me back on the cassette deck.
Wow.
He ran it turntable style. And it was like a moment that changed my life because I had to go and get a tape player. The Walkman's was done by then, but I had an old Walkman.
Right.
And I had this cassette and I heard myself recorded. And he was just blending instrumentals, switching it like on some real DJ. And I was just going off and I didn't know that this was part of, because, I came in the Nas Wu era.
So right.
He took me back to like, nah, this was like how they did it in the jams. And he's like, bro, you just made an album. And I was like, what? And then he's like, nah, he's like, you think of choruses, songs. And then I was like, wow, okay. The cipher was the first thing. Then recording and hearing myself back was step two. And then I just ran through everything, and then going back to Fat Beats, first record, shout out to Eclipse. He put it out in there. And then he invited me to do the halftime show. And then it was very like, okay, boom, he asked me to do it. And then I did it. Somebody heard me on the halftime show.
Right, right.
It just starts to open a door. And then for me, I kept going around the scene and because I wanted to do something for the community. My mom always did things community-based. So I was like, I want to do something to help. So when I started doing my shows, I would always tag it to, and this is the origin of my artivism, let's do a clothing drive, it's winter, let's do coats.
Right.
Or, let's do canned food, it's feed people. I would always say, let's just not just do the music, because it was a way to separate it. And then, of course, teachers started coming to the shows, and then they would ask me, like, could you come to my school? And then I started volunteering, and then long story short, the volunteering led to people paying me. As a kid who never went to college, I went to audio school. I did a 9-month trade school.
Nice.
I went to audio school to learn to record so I could do that. And then from then, I got blessed where teachers just start saying, I'll give you $50 an hour if you can come And like, as a young cat, I was like, I'm getting 50 an hour. You couldn't tell me nothing.
Right.
I got in, and then
it is a lot.
He turned to 100. And then like, after that, I was just like, and I worked with any and every organization I could, because they would just hear the music and then they would ask me to do it. I never intended on it, really. But I did care about serving community.
You know? It's a long story short, but we're going to get more into that part of the story, because that's, you know, important. But also, it sounds like a lot of this was certainly like organic. Like, you weren't necessarily saying, this is the path. You're just taking it as it goes. By the way, shouts to the people out here that hip hop helped succeed in life who don't have a college degree.
That's how
some of us get by. But who education is a very big part, big important part of our lives. My dad was actually a distinguished professor of sociology, taught for over 40 years at Old West, SUNY Old Westbury, you know, and, so education is always important to me, and I got a lot through osmosis. But the fact that the creativity was able to be turned into something entrepreneurial, that's the hip hop spirit. That's where I learned it from.
Man, it's the same thing that I say. Like, when I got brought into that world, it was organic, but then that's why I say hip hop was a pedagogy. I didn't know the word pedagogy at the time, but I learned that I was navigating the same way I learned to navigate in the cipher, the same way I learned to navigate and talk to a venue and then go into the venue and host an event. So like, that entrepreneurial spirit was with me, because I didn't have it in me to like go work for somebody or anything. So,
but you did though. Tell me about a little bit of the so now you're saying, okay, I'm an artist and that's cool, but I'm also sort of an event producer or a host, and I'm working and now I'm sort of a connector and a dot connector. And then you said, like you said, you wanted to start doing something purposeful along the way to say, well, how can I give back with this visibility that I have? You did work with some organizations. You did kind of dabble your toes into other organizations. What were some of them that were, you know, that were good you want to talk about? And what were some of the challenges? I know I've heard before you say that you were having some challenges with some of these organizations as well, trying to put together some of the ideas you had. Give me some of both of that.
Thank you for asking, Manny. That's a great question. It started with the love of the art, right? I just went and did it. So same thing, when the schools asked me to pop up, I'd be like, they're like, Tuesday for an hour or two? I was like, I'll come by. But what I saw, Manny, which would change my approach as an artist, which I always give credit to the work, is I saw these kids do it. And I was a little late with it, with the blooming. But when I went to that school in the Bronx, it was on 3rd Avenue, 149th Street, Elijah D. Clark Middle School. Mm-hmm. They slice up schools now. Now it's South Bronx Prep and these other things.
Sure.
But I went in there, and those kids, I was going to the hip hop scene that we spoke about earlier. And then I saw what these kids were doing. I was like, yo, they're not even looking for any reason except to express like the deepest thing. And I was like, something's here that isn't here. Because, in the other scene, there was just people trying to make it, right?
Right,
people
trying to get on,
they got
to
do. But, like, these youth were just doing these songs to, like, deal with life. And they also, they wanted to sing. They wanted to make beats. They wanted to play instruments. They were very, as kids are, you know, you have your father, you have children, so you know. They just wanted to be so interdisciplinary. One day they'd want to do this or that. And I was in there, and I'd be like, yeah, sure, whatever you want to do. Then I'd be like, okay, let's look up what this chord is, or let's figure out how to make this. And then, you know, when drum patterns changed and production changed, they taught me. And then what went down is I started volunteering. Shout out to Rosa and Urban Artbeat. That's where I think I first talked to you. My first very, very introduction to it. And then from there, Urban Word is, you know, Mikal. Shout out to Mikal. He works with me on Nile. Shout out to Nile Emerson. Yep. You know, he was doing his thing. He did the Let the Beat Build with NYU. He brought me into Clive Davis. Then I started doing the things at NYU. And then because I had the audio engineering background, I worked at Electric Lady. And then I had that. But I was a deep behind the scenes cat, you know, and I was obsessed by knowing how do they do it? You know, how do they do it? And I just wanted to know, whoa, snap, this is Questlove's drums on these D'Angelo records. Oh, I started getting into low-key ethnomusicology. Started looking at, where did these samples come from? Oh, this is Curtis Mayfield. This is Ahmad Jamal on Nas.
Then
I'd be like, oh, that's a Fender Rhodes on that. Or that's a Steinway Grant. I'm just kind of a geek like that. And I just started keep looking. And I think, you know, one thing kept leading me to the other, bro. It was real big. And then long story short, once again, it goes deep. I started working with a lot of nonprofit organizations, some no longer exist, like Bridging Education and Art Together. And I got to an amazing level where I honestly was able to pay like New York City rent and get a car. Like I didn't even know how it happened because I just did it. And I cared about community, and I got to thank my mom for that because
What were some of the things that you were doing, I guess, in practice? So what were some of the programs that you were involved in? What did it look like? A little bit specific.
Yeah. So first what happened is I would go in there. Usually they would start out like with a stack of beats, and then we would go in with beats and then do hip hop songwriting. Right. So I teach kids how to count bars, do that. But quickly, because of the nature of youth, they wanted to make beats. And because I had that audio engineering and production background, I was like, okay, let's do it. So then they started asking me to make the records. So low key, high key, I got put into a deep producer role. And who's crazier than high school kids? They're like, this is whack. This thing is whack. I don't this.
Right.
And I was like, oh, and I was the only one who I stayed. 1 hour became 4 hours I was there because I would just love what they were doing, and they would push me and I would push them artistically. And yeah, I started producing the records and then making the songs. And then I would go home on my computer and then mix them and then do that. And it was just like a nonstop thing for me. Then I would go do the workshop, go out to the scene.
Right.
I definitely have like an addiction personality. So I just was like, I just kept doing it and doing it. And then like, I didn't let any voice get in my head. And then sooner or later, the organizations, I'm doing two organizations on Monday, Wednesday, another one on Tuesday, Thursday.
Mm.
And I'm forgetting the names. I'm just remembering it by, oh, this is the Bronx. I got to get home. I got to take the bus from White Plains Road. Like, it started to become a blur, man. And in that blur, I submerged myself into something. And then, long story gets deeper, I should say. Let me just keep saying it goes deeper.
Right.
I then ended up starting a company called Creative Expressions because I could not do enough work. I was just too much. I was one person and I got so in demand. And when I would try to alley-oop my friends, the organizations would be like, well, yo, you're doing something special. And then I had to be like, well, what do I do that other people aren't? There's other people I know that are nice on a mic, that are good with rhymes, that can audio engineer. But then I started to actually write the lesson plans and a curriculum because I had to teach other people how to get the sauce. And I realized, I do something innately that is what I call on the website cipher pedagogy. It's based on like a non-hierarchical form of learning, but I had to note it to be able to show it to other people.
Right.
Because they might have had the beat making chops, but they didn't have the ability to go into like an auditorium of 500 kids and like spit two bars and shut it down.
Yeah.
And like if you don't got it like that, these kids, they will literally boo you. They will. So I got ran through a different level of fire that I don't think a lot of artists get ran through. You know,
Let me ask you one question before we talk. I want to get a little bit more into the cipher pedagogy, what that means, what that looks like. Sure. We never know who's listening. Sometimes we're preaching to the choir. We have folks that understand the power of the cipher, and you know, shout out to Tony Blackman, you know, who we've talked about on the show, who everyone's talked about, you know, that the importance of the understanding of these things. But there are some people who are just dabbling their toe into the like hip hop based education or dabbling their feet into these things. And so they don't fully know. But before we get to you kind of breaking it down, breaking down with the breakdown, as it were, what were some of the things that you were seeing? And again, we don't know who's listening. And I often try to say, you know, what was the value that you were getting? It's fun to make beats and it's fun to make songs and all that stuff. And it's fun. Yay. But obviously there was a deeper outcome to working with young people, high school students, you were saying at the time, in these, you know, traditionally underserved or underfunded and under-resourced and underloved, you know, school systems, communities, that you were noticing that your approach specifically, but more generally working with them musically is drawing out of them. What was the goodness that was happening there? What were you seeing?
Well, yo, just to be dead ass, as they say, it's like I saw a younger version of myself and I was like, wow, I felt like I was going to like find a younger me. And I saw because I wasn't artistic that much as a kid. I had some things unlocked because I was nice with the pen. I worked some like citywide essay writing things, but I'm a product of the public schools. And I was like, wow, if somebody would have showed me that this is musical, because once again, it was only till the cipher that I mentioned, that beatboxer that lured me in. It was like, push. It was through that I just was doing it like I had spinach in my teeth. That somebody's like, no, this is like, you're not regular at this. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I just needed someone to show me that. And
that you had an ability that you didn't even like understand.
I didn't know it, because what you really do is it'll always go over your own head. And that's why I was like, okay, So like, I just knew that I wanted to do something more. But then like a couple years later, when all my other homies were broke, and or they went back to school or they did something, and they were like, how are you doing this? And I said, well, I was into helping these kids. And when I made a why, where I was like, do I follow what everybody else is doing, or do I do this whole thing? And there was no term teaching artist back then. I didn't even know.
Right. I learned it from y'all. I learned what a teaching artist was from y'all, from Urban Art Beat, from you, from Macau, from Sam Sellers and Rabbi Darkside, folks doing that kind of work.
Shout out to those guys, because they're my OGs, because they're from the generation before me. But all those guys are licensed teachers.
And that's what I'm saying.
Like, I came from the University of the Universe. So
I like that.
I hit it hard, but because I was coming from the very practical of doing it, it was really, really powerful. So what happened with the schools, kind of to go back to what you were saying, is it led me to do the work, and then it actually helped me artistically, because I always say that I'm an artist first. That's why I use the term artivist in my company versus teaching artist, because I use the art, you know, and every day I'm cranking out songs and beats, and like it taught me how to play the guitar, the keys, this same pedagogy.
Yeah.
I swear it was the same thing that got me like, yo, I want to be nice at triplets or whatever. Then I learned that, wow, I'm a musician, because then a jazz musician heard me rhyme. He's like, dude, you can rhyme on any meter. You're not the same. It was this always of someone recognizing me that you have an innate ability that not many people have. And then I would have to try to like dig in my spirit and be like, what am I doing that is drawing people to this, so that I could like notice it. And then I realized that I'm very studious. I have a ability to like really work at something so deeply. I'm an ambivert, so I could go into the cave introvert style and like work on something for hours and hours, forget my name, and then put that 10 hours in a row. And then like some people don't have that. And then I could bring it down to a level where I could show it to someone else. Because when I show it to someone else, they show me their kung fu style, and it starts.
Right. So it's drawing these innate skills, or these underappreciated skills, from folks that are, they do what they do, but they don't know what they're doing. And this draws it out of them and helps them kind of, I don't want to say perfect it, but shape it, mold it, and bring it to life.
It brings something deeper. Like it's a spiritual aspect. What's his name? Black Dot, Hip Hop Decoded. I remember reading that book, and he broke down the hip hop elements to like, he paralleled, he put MC to anything that's vocal expression, poetry, singing, this and this. He took graffiti all the way back to hieroglyphics.
Right.
Then
of course
he took the B-boy and B-girl to movement.
Sure.
And that really connected to very deep level, the DJ representing using an instrument or sound. And I was like, wow. And he's like, this is an ancient indigenous practice.
Right.
And I love that book. And that, shout out to Black Dot, that book really helped me kind of see hip hop in the, that broader lens, like, oh snap, jazz came. And then I started understanding literally black art forms that are inter and multidisciplinary create this style, whether it was blues, gospel, jazz, any of these things that are historically coming from oppression.
Yes.
And then that's when I drew a line to everything. And I was like, wait a minute, it was like the Matrix. I was like, I could learn anything. I was like, I could teach myself the guitar.
Right.
I can do this. I can learn how to sing. It's insane.
That's brilliant.
And I think it was because of, I understood it was a pedagogy. Once again, not a genre.
Right.
I limit it to what it sometimes gets presented as, depending on like what era or generation or exposure you have. So I went back to the OG roots of it, and I made this deeper connection to something that Black Dot articulates really well. And Black Dot articulates it really well in Carnegie and all the places too. But
how
I drew it, kind of just started carving my own way of innovation, you know?
I love it. So now you had to do two things. You had a number one, form a company just to kind of do it right, you know, structured. But then you also have to structure the pedagogy. You have to structure, like you said, download the information from your brain to say, okay, we're making.
What am I doing?
Right. I have to be able to replicate, you know how they say, you have to take it to scale,
you got to make it be sustainable, right?
Yeah.
How can you take it beyond
yourself? So I guess there's a lot of folks that are going through that are probably on the cusp of, I do a thing. It's either my part-time gig or, you know, it's my full-time gig, but just barely. And I want to, you know, blossom out. So what did that look like to you? What did you have to do to go through that process? We'll get to the company and what it actually does. But what was that like for you? How did you do it?
Yeah, I would say it's in you or it isn't, you know, right? Because some people, I meet them all the time because I do this training to help musicians, artists, and educators become artivists or, you know, depending arts educators, whatever right. they want to do, right? And right. what I do is I'm like, why do you want to do it? And honestly, this is the two spectrums. This is not a judgment. It's an observation from teaching hundreds, if not thousands of people this. Now, yeah. you know, I stopped teaching youth almost 10 years ago. So now I focus right. on helping the adults who need a lot more help than kids, you know?
Teaching the teachers how to teach.
Yeah, and then yeah. helping the musicians and artists. So the right. first thing that I see is this, and once again, it's not a judgment. Mm-hmm. It's artists that usually, they weren't able to do their goal. They were like, I want to be successful at beat making, right. emceeing, producing. And for whatever reason, they fell short. And they're like, I want to get into this. Because, and then they hear me, oh, this guy gets paid mad bread and da-da-da-da-da. And I was right. like, yo, guys, y'all don't know. I only go in for 2 hours, but I'm so obsessed. I'm putting in like 8-9 hours into this thing.
At least.
I love it.
I've do PDs now. It's at least that much. It's at least a 5-to-1 ratio.
You gotta make something. Yeah. And it's insane to go in and do this 30 minute or an hour, right? Yeah. Jazz mentor taught me that. He's like, yeah, that one note, anyone could do it. But when I do that second move, that's my whole life's experience.
Two notes.
So that's what I say. I'm like, nah, it's the sauce. And then what I say is, it's okay, but are you willing to, you have to fall in love with it the same way you fell in love with the craft, because it's right. it is a craft. And the second half is people who innately, by whatever human design they got, they're just like, I see this as bigger than entertainment. Right. And that's kind of where I was. I just was like, it healed me. Like, I was a super pothead and things got me focused. I was like, nah, not before the studio though. I gotta wait till after. Like, I didn't have a disciplined kind of background, but this was like, nah, I gotta do this. Or yo, they got 3 songs. I gotta do my 3, and I'm gonna come up there and do this. I gotta get to this merch store across town, right. pick up these $5,000 box of flyers. I gotta go right. to every open mic and hand these out hand to hand, right?
Yeah.
Because I purpose. Was like, man, I need Give to purpose. Show. I need to show the omniverse, the higher powers that I'm not fucking around. That right. I am showing up, because that's the only way that you could manifest something, in my yeah. opinion. So I had to kind of put that word. And my dad is a blue collar MTA guy. He thought I was wasting my life. He's like, you're doing the drugs, so you want to support the drug. The guy in these things, you know.
Okay. Yeah. So
he was just like, he didn't really understand. But when I got on the NBA Live soundtrack, threw him a check that was 4 digits, and I was like, yo, pops, that's 32 bars that did this, you know, one verse. And then I got a big royalty check, because for every copy that sold, I got a. So I just learned that I just believed in myself. And you hear that story across the board in any art form. So I tell people, once again, look inside yourself. And if you can get to a space where you want to use your art to go beyond yourself and make an impact in it, that's all you need as a foundation. On that foundation, this is where it gets practical.
Right.
And you go in there just like the MC is master of the crowd. Can you go into a classroom, a town hall? Can you go into a amphitheater of 1,000 people and in that 10 seconds say something or offer a perspective that is a new color in the crayon box? And you develop that by what Bruce Lee said. He's not worried about the guy with 10,000 different kicks. It's about that one person who keeps throwing that same punch or kick over, because you get hit with that, you're done. Because you have to refine it. And that's where, to me, it's like you have to look in it, look at what is your approach and your style, make sure it's bigger than yourself, and you have to become a student, right?
Absolutely.
I keep the clay wet. That's what kept me sharp. When the drill beats came out, I was like, all right, we going to do this?
We're going to learn this,
When these hi-hat patterns changed, I didn't become a purist. I became a moldist to be like, yo, let's go. And as long as I could connect to people on the art form, be like, yo, how do you do that on that crack copy of Fruity Loops? Show me how you did that, you know? Oh, you're doing beats on an iPad? Oh, you use Splice samples? Right. I was just like, teach me. And then these kids will show you.
Right.
And in turn, I was like, well, I could show you this. I could tell you what key it's in.
Each one teach one goes both ways.
It's a symbiotic relationship, brother. So that's really what I'd say. And write down everything. Take voice notes. I'm big on the Google Docs. I do it. Then I identify it. Then I break it down. It's called PAR, participatory action-based research. Paulo Ferreri created a technique where you take an action, you analyze the action. Sports players and athletes do this all the time. You reflect on it, and then you create a methodology oh, I'm always crossing over to the left. All right, I got to bust to the right now.
Right.
So you start to analyze yourself, and then you have to replicate it to show that if I'm nice on a giddy and I could show somebody it, that means I'm really proficient at it, that I could pass it on to someone else. Right. And that takes a higher level of mastery than just being able to do it for yourself.
Yeah, we talk about just shouts to, of course, you know, Dr. Christopher Emden, the science genius battles, you know, where the kids have to create songs based on the science, curriculum that they're being taught. You have to really know your shit to be able to do an entire song or entire verses about something as complex as a scientific thing that you're studying. It's not just taking the, you know, what's written in the book and translating it into rhyme form. It's a mastery of the content.
That's what I love about it. And thank you for giving me all the compliments, Manny, but it's the art. I was like, what's the illest way to get the illest, right? That's hip hop, right?
Yeah.
How do you be the dopest?
Yep.
And to me, I was like, these kids are writing songs from a deeper place than these people on the scene.
Right.
Because they're dealing with their mom on drugs, so they can write in to like cope with that. They're not writing to be, yo, I'm trying to get signed. Now they are, you know.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because now they realize they can do it too, right?
Yeah, but like now it's the bar, you know.
And some still are. Little kids are still are. Absolutely, 100%.
But you know, I met those kids in the Bronx, and they were coming from a space that deeply inspired. Like, I went home and my pen was on fire.
I love it because, you know. We have too many, as you know, we have a lot of folks that are, you know, older than you and some older than me, you know, who are discouraged by, you know, the youth and the youth culture within hip hop. There's a lot to be discouraged about. But as I like to say, we can't throw away the youth culture with the mumble bap rap, baby, with the rumble bap bathwater. So it's good to say that to always keep in mind. And this is the inspiring part of what you're saying is when I worked with the youth, I learned from the youth. Right. You learn. It's a symbiotic relationship. Now, though, it's translated because now you're talking to folks who are in positions to also help youth, you know, so it's teaching the teachers, teaching the artists and also not just youth, but the activism part. So said activism doesn't have to be political, like you said, but it is. It does involve, you know, sometimes policy or getting involved in issues. And I want to know how. You look at that and how you work with artists and, I guess, train artists to train other artists, how the whole thing works, specifically with the activism part of it. We talked a little bit about education for the first part here. Let's talk a little bit about the artivism part.
Well, let me tell y'all this, man. I live in a one-bedroom apartment in Astoria, New York. I don't have a degree. My rent is almost $2,500, right? And that's activism. The fact that I'm not homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that there's no cap, you know, it's real because this is what I know how to do. And I just show up every day to my craft. And then I'm just like, honestly, I'm like, the universe is going to see what I'm doing. I pretend and I know there's a record button watching me all day, whether I do something I'm a little embarrassed about that.
Right.
We're all balanced. But Manny, this part to me, that is why I say it's activating your organism to its highest potential. I was like, yo, I'm gonna be on Manny's interview. I know you even wrote on the email. You could come in a little late. I'm like, nah, I'm coming in early. You know, that's that mentality. I'm like, nah, I'm gonna come in. I'm gonna blast a post of it. I'm gonna make sure I shout my guy out. It's that etiquette that to me is activism. It's just like thinking beyond yourself because abundance is a state of being, right? And it's to be like, yo, my man's just putting me on. He's giving me opportunity to say something. I'm just blessed that people even care to hear, even if it's one person.
That's how I feel. Yeah, when someone invites me to talk, like, I'm like, oh, thanks.
I'm going
to
treat this. This is the garden, bro. This is the garden. If you really put that in your mind, it's imagination. And if you look at hip hop, meaning the original way it started, it was young people. These were 14, 15 year olds grabbing their grandmother's records. Yep. They didn't know what they were doing. They were building a bridge as they crossed it. And then it became a multi-million, billion-dollar thing. But the foundation can never be removed, which is based to me on a freedom of oppression, which means they took away the music programs from the school.
Right.
So then now it was like, how am I going to get access to this? So I'm going to take my grandma's records. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The blackout happened 73. They started snatching equipment. Now people are cracking software. They learn how to hack and they learn how to get a download a copy of Fruity Loops, like I mentioned, or they can crack an app on an iPad or a tablet. this in itself is activism culture, bro. Like mm-hmm. to me, and I feel like it gets the revolutionary part of the most revolutionary thing you could be is yourself. And that's what I tell all my students. And I always say this, put your hand on your heart. If you hear, you feel a beat, say something over that beat. Bang, Manny. Mm. You just said something with a pitch and a tone over a beat. By law, that's a musician right there. Mm. So like we forget how deep this is in our speech. When you see somebody walking down the street and say happy birthday, oh, you go, oh. When you say, oh, like somebody just got smacked, oh, right? You change your pitch and tone. We are designed as humans, but I think there's a lot of things that blur that line and break that. And for me, you got to clear out those things that colonize our minds and get back to it, because it was just me humming some words. I'm a chill with Manny. That's what I do. Ah, still I got to get it like it's new to news. When I break it down, y'all get the clues. Question mark in the dark with a paintbrush. Got the art. Noah's art. Two of a kind with the rhyme. Drop it. No dimes. No snitches, wishes. This is fictitious. Gifted like Christmas. But Christ wasn't a Christian, and just the vision, knowledge plus the wisdom. See, I can do that easier than I can talk. I mutated myself to be that way.
Right.
And that's, you can do that. And to me, that's what I did. I activated myself, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Activated myself. And that's why I say that's activism. That when you got a more, you're going to break that sandwich in half and give somebody a piece because you know they're hungry, right?
Yeah.
You're going to do this innately, I think, if you do your own work. And I think you're going to want to do something so that you can share it, right? You know, a little kid with a painting. I'm sure your daughters come up to you, Pop, look what I did, right?
Of course.
Because they're proud of it and they want to show it to somebody.
Yeah.
And I think that's activism, man. So
yeah.
I have a very different definition. But
no, that's brilliant.
It leads to the world change and all of that.
Yeah, I like it. It's a very spiritual kind of way of thinking of it in a way. I just want to shout out a couple of folks in the chat that are we're getting a lot of comments. You'll probably see it out.
Big things.
Yep. Yeah, you'll probably see it afterwards. Shouts to Prism, Chosen Hip Hop. Andrew Wang, who's using your curriculum as a basis for his curriculum. He's doing some hip hop curriculum. He's based up in Yonkers. He's a music ed teacher. Yep. Super dope. Silent Night's in the building. We know Silent Night from the scene, the aforementioned scene that we're talking about in New York. And James Hernandez is on the check-in as well. I just wanted to give some love to folks who are checking in. If you're listening on the pod.
Those are all legends in there.
Absolutely. If you're listening on the podcast, don't forget, we do this live on video on YouTube Mondays, 9 p.m. Eastern. Just go to hiphopcansaveamerica.com/watch. While I got you a few more minutes, if you'd be so kind, let me know. So with everything that you've said is very inspiring. It's a great way to look at things, looking at activism in a way that isn't defined that way very often. So what does the organization do? Who is it for? What does Creative Expressions, do? And I said, who is it for? Who reaches out to y'all and what are they trying to get that y'all can provide? What services do y'all can provide?
Yeah, I got a funny story about the inception. It's a real hip hop story, right?
Yeah.
I started working as a W-9 independent contractor. Those of you guys who know, it's a freelancer, long story short. So I was freelancing.
I've done that too.
Arts organization. You know how it is. Mm-hmm. Making a living as a freelancer could be crazy. Right. So the first couple of years I was doing it, I didn't know how the tax system works, how the W-9s worked or any of that. So the good old folks at the IRS, they waited 5 years. So when I started making tens of thousands of dollars, they waited and then they smacked me with a bill. This is, you owe back taxes for 5 years. And I was like, I ain't got the bread. I'm living in New York. I expect it all. I'm like, no, I don't got nothing there. There's no savings out here. You know what it was.
I do. So I specifically know what it was. You know, been similar path. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I was like, oh man, what am I going to do? They hit me with a crazy bill. And my cousin, rest in peace, she's no longer with us. She was going to school for accounting. Mm. I was like, yo, cuz, Jess. I was like, help me out. The government's trying to shut me down. I got nothing. And they're coming for the bread. And I was like, yo. And she was like, nah, why? Calm down. You got to start a business. Business. Mm-hmm. She was like, show me all the W-9 things, the 1099s. Right. She's like, bring it to my office. I'm going to take a look at it. And then she's like, pick a name. And I was like, all right. It kind of felt like I was signing myself. It was like me making a record label almost where I sat down with her. I showed her everything. She goes, nah, we're going to take care of this in 1 year. She's like, in 1 year, you're gonna get it. She's like, we're going to write everything off. She's like, you got to build a company. You got to write off everything. Anytime you buy a guitar string, a hard drive. She was like, build a company. And she's like, this will all go away in 1 year. And I was like, yo, all right, you don't want to know this. I'm just like, yo, I can't even owe nobody a dollar. That's the way I was raised.
Right.
So I was like, I don't know how to do this. So I picked the name Creative Expressions because it's like, this is me expressing creativity. And long story short, once again, I founded the company just as a way to kind of handle my taxes and work as a freelancer.
Right.
And then sure enough, when I could not do enough work, I was like, well, let me try to ask two of my homies that make beats and write songs if they could do it, because I can't do this gig in the Bronx. I'm at this one.
Oh, yeah, we can't be in two places at the same time. Right, I get it. So yeah, okay.
That's what happened, man. Yeah. It started, and then... so
not a bad problem to have, but it's a problem.
Yeah, it was just, it was growth, and then I was like, you know, I wanted to do more of my artistic work, and I was like, nah, now I want to learn more about music, composition, theory, arrangement. I just wanted to get more deeper down the rabbit hole as a musician, so I was like, nah, if I could give these cats these gigs... And I remember I started at 50. I was like, if I could get them to the level where I started at and help them, I can do it. Then I had two. Then I had three. Now I'm up to 35, man.
Yeah, you got a roster. Yeah,
I got a big roster right now. We do our best to find work. And then I come in doing a lot of the musical directing and then composition, arrangement stuff. So I come in as an artist, high key. So like I took myself and anybody who's able to... want to do it, I look at them as just like the way the kids were the younger version of me. Now that I'm older, I go and help the adults do what I did.
The earlier version of you.
And so my whole life has always been looking for the people who, like the younger me, you know, always like finding it in the next generation, planting the seeds and doing what it takes, and then making sure that I keep my sword sharp, because if I can't show up with the beats or the lyrics or the flows, none of this works, Manny. Like, that's the problem I have with a lot of hip hop academics. Mm-hmm. They're too academic, but I was like, yo, there's too many artists that need the work.
100%.
Need to allow real artists to come into the classroom.
Yeah.
You know, the greatest coaches were the people who were on the field.
Players.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They were the
We talk about this. I advocate for this all the time, 100% on your, I'm disagreeing with you 100%. Practitioners are just as, again, I'm not, you know, I don't come from a degree program, but I could teach hip hop, like, because obviously, you know, you're a practitioner. So, you know, they have to understand that we need more of that. Just want to be specific. To anyone who might be, first of all, two things. Number one, you work with musicians of all kinds. So this is not just hip hop. This has been very hip hop focused program. But
the
you're a musician yourself.
Is the hip hop.
Right, exactly. So that's the hip hop part. But music of all kinds and spoken any word and other, any kind of artistic painting, visual, right.
Of artistic expression.
But again, to be specific, who's hiring you? Like what, you know, who, so that people who might be involved in, you know, who might be able to hire y'all, what are they hiring you for? And who are they?
So, for example, like Carnegie, the similar sect that does the Black Thought Initiative, they've hired me to produce. I've done like, 40 records for Carnegie Hall, music composition arrangement. I just finished on New York Edge. They were like the beacon. They're partnered in 133 schools. They sent me to work with their teaching artists. So I site visited them. I listened to the music. I came in for like composition and arrangement things. And then I helped mix in, because the way I break a lot of artistic segregation, because a lot of what they're doing now, here's a piano class. Here's a hip hop poetry class. I'm like, nah, you got to put it all together, man.
Okay.
Let the kids who are putting this be more participant led. I break a lot of walls, Manny. That's what I do.
Yep.
So it's arts organizations. It is usually some higher institutions. It's individuals. Sometimes they hit me up to learn about grant writing. Sometimes it's the people who just want to intern with me to figure out the pedagogy. Some people need me to tell them that story of how I built the company to dodge the taxes.
Right.
And, it's very cipher based, and I do consultations. So they could go to the website, creativeexpressions.co. You could book 30 minutes. We have an inquiry form. I look at the inquiry from individuals, organizations. Like right now I'm rewriting the standards for the music education across the country with NAFME and Martha Diaz. It's insane, bro.
Love
like
it.
We're doing some stuff at Lincoln Center. It's just wild, bro. And all I do is I sit right here by myself in this very room, and I've been working on my craft every day for hours for 15 years.
Yeah.
And that's what I make sure. If I wake up, brush my teeth, wash my ass, get out there and do this, I trust that the other things will work out, man. And
it's
a crazy approach, but I dedicate myself, and I always say 20% of my time I have to give back to people. So it's an 80-20 rule.
Right.
20% I put into my craft, 20% I put into eating healthy, exercising, meditation, 20% goes into the unknown wild shit that just happens being a human being living.
Absolutely.
And then 20% is just me dealing with whatever I have on the menu for today. I'm like, I got to go do Manny's show. I got to get my laundry done, do groceries.
That's right.
So I break things really into a structured basin because I don't want to work traditional jobs. I'm hyper structured. So it's like, I have a crazy, that's why I tell people like, you should see this stuff I do. I was like, yo, I'm gonna spit for like 2 minutes straight before I go into this thing with Manny, just cause I gotta juice myself up the same way I would do for a show.
Love it.
Cause it's an energy thing, my guy.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
No, I love it, man. I could, and we can learn from you. Like, there, you know, I'm in a similar boat. I work for myself. I run my own company. I try to stay, you know, motivated, and cause you know, it's tough sometimes.
Hard, bro.
Hard, man. What we do is real hard. You know, listen, I really appreciate it. If there's anything else that, first of all, is anyone listening? I saw a question pop up in here.
Anything, man. I'm here, man.
This is an interesting question. Beth Bliss is on the check-in and asked a question. I guess we were talking about academics. I'm gonna throw it on the screen. Let's see your opinion. Yeah. Let's take a live question. This is live TV. Why do hip hop educators or academics overlook or sleep on intergenerational relationships? We touched on it. What do you think?
This is big, brother. As we said, hip hop was youth culture, meaning these were teenagers that started it. You know,
absolutely.
It was young people from the dancing to that. And why the importance of multi-generational relationships? Why have jazz mentors now, right?
Sure.
You got the OGs that they teach me, why here's this chord. When you have seen and lived through a different era, you carry a code in you. And you have to, KRS had a great snippet that he said. He said, when young people stay around older people, they're sharper around other young people.
Right.
When older people get around young people, they're sharper around other older people. Because I picked up the things from the youth, and every teaching artist teaches me. I'm working on another gig to do an EP. And then same thing. I talked to the teaching artist. I'm like, hey, what can you teach me about this, love? Even though I've been there. And she was like, what? You're asking me? You're the
director. You're the expert.
And I was like, nah, I'm going to tell you. That's why I have a question mark in my moniker, the why and the question mark. Because I'm like, look, I do this way, but I need to know how your kung fu style is so we can figure this out. So it's huge for me, Manny. And this is just a life thing. So to answer Beth's question, every generation carries a code that comes from what you witnessed, right? I saw tapes turn into CDs, turn into streaming, and I kept updating. I saw my MySpace going to Facebook, going to Spotify's and whatever. And I just keep adapting. So adaptability is required. And as long as you're alive, that's what keeps you, like, Manny, you're still young at heart because you keep on growing. I've seen beautiful stories. You talked about your college age children and, of course, how you're in the South, you're down in ATL, right? You see? Life is a lifelong journey, man. So you're not evolving. And to me, the essence of hip hop pedagogy is to be an ever evolving thing.
Right. As I often say, it's very tough to try to put in a box something that's not supposed to be in a box. And it's not very nature.
That's how I feel. You know, I could deal with you for days on this, man.
Yeah. No, I get it. I appreciate the question. And I think that the question is also touching on like that ivory tower, you know, approach that we have to break through, you know, sometimes they have to do it because they feel like they have to be structured and academic and their institutions aren't going to let them reach back into the culture like they may want to. So, and it's always, we talk with hip hop academics all the time who have to fight that need for validation versus F that validation. You know what I mean? Like, we don't always want to y'all validation. We don't care if you don't accept our culture and our participation. That's what I'm saying, right? So, but then we also be like, I mean, it's not a bad place to be if we can get there on our terms and our it's meaning the culture.
I've heard you say this, Manny. I got to give you your flowers for this. This way of thinking, whether they use or know the word hip hop, but this pedagogical approach of a cipher is changing the face of everything we do. Look at you and I streaming, having this, right?
Yep.
I'm like, yo, I'm gonna make sure I get on the headphones with the SM7.
we gonna do it right.
Mike, we out here. We're gonna do this right. This is my guy, right?
Sure.
See, it's that mentality, right? To say, yo, I'm gonna show up for this dude like you are the president, bro. And like, that makes me, that's beneficial to me to treat you with that respect. to be like, yo, this dude is caring what I have to say.
Right.
I'm going to promote him. I'm going to promote. I told people, I even put a post, yo, even if you don't watch, go subscribe to my guy's channel.
I saw. I appreciate it. I saw.
That costs nothing, bro.
Right.
Nothing. But right. That mentality is everything. I don't know how I pay the rent, but I do it. And I swear on everything. It's because I treat people with the same level of respect. And to me, that comes from something that is innate to us that we forget. Because come on, man, no views. If you're a dick, people are going to remember that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
100%. They don't.
You're
not gonna be well liked in the cipher.
You're not gonna be well liked, bro. The cipher regulates it.
It's peer review.
Regulated. So what I gotta do? I just gotta show up, embody it, and be authentic.
Right, and be authentic and respectful. That's right.
That's all I got, bro. And I tell people it's simple but not easy. Because when you live this way, bro, you're doing it. You're self-employed. I've watched your journey for over 10 years. So like. That's why I say, nah, you're no different than me. You got in the trenches, you stuck to a vision, and you went at it relentlessly.
Relentless.
And that's the only way to succeed in life. I think that's it. You have to have this, whether it's one view, 1,000, 1 million, you treat it the same. And that is innate to hip-hop culture, I believe. You know, that's why I say, anybody who's really about this, you're going to express a vibration and a feeling that cannot be denied. And that's what's gotten me everything I've ever achieved. I never even thought I would get this far, man.
Yeah.
So it's just like, it happened, man. It happened. Yeah. It's continuing to happen and take me to places I never, ever dreamed of. First time on an airplane, everything was done through this very essence of what I'm striving to communicate to your listeners, man.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. And like I said, it is very inspiring to know that the thing that we are is a thing, is all we need.
Big facts.
Right? No, that's it. It's in. And forget me and you. We older. We figured it out. Young people, you know, folks who are jaded, who are part of the call, have that DNA, but don't think it's, you know, like it's, this is who you are is all you need. And you know, and you're helping to articulate that. I'm doing my part. Really glad that we finally had a chance to really kind of kick it and get deep into where you come from, how you've been doing it, what you're doing. Once again, creativeexpressions.co, I believe, is the website. You are on the internet webs, socials as Why Not Show Love, as I have on the screen. Why is in W-H-Y.
Why Not showlove.com. That's my artist site. So hit me up on that. Anything y'all want to learn anything, there's a link in my link tree. Click it, 30 minutes. I'll give anybody for free. That's my tithe to the community. So like, I allow everybody to have an opening conversation with me, just like you did, Manny. And I want to say thank you so much. And anytime you need anything that's within my capacity to support you with, we have a community event page. We'd love to keep putting your stuff on there. Let's put it on there. I'll send you a follow-up email with my admin so that you can, you know, people need to hear what you're doing, because it's people like you who are truly independent that are looking out for people like me, man, you know, and trust me, it does not go ungratituded, man, you know, like that's it.
I appreciate it's it.
Highly, it means a lot, bro, that you actually gave me this time on here, because you've done this for a long time.
Yeah, it's long overdue. I know you for a long time, but I waited till we made it all pretty. Come on now, you gotta do it right.
Good, man. We're always moving divine time, just like it
of
all.
Of course, so thank not you always, so not not always there when you call, but we're always on time. Well, listen, and anything you need as well, you please let me know if you're doing anything. I broadcast out. I have the newsletter. I have the show. I'll let people know when I'm back up in New York. You know, we'll hang out. If you're down in Atlanta, let's holler and you know,
let's do it.
All the things, my man Yogi. Why? Thank you so much, sir. We'll be in touch.
Peace.
All right.
Love.
And check. And anyone who's in the comments wants to reach out. This man is very approachable, as you could tell.
That's it.
Yeah.
Many faces in the places. No disrespect. We do this every day. Might just snap your neck with a new pedagogy. Google it. I make up my own philosophy. Drop the stop. It's off the top. Let it go. Before it was hip hop. It was all jazz. Just a gift of the gab. Got to let it all go with a little bit of gas. Slow it on down with the brakes. I mistake my mistakes and I correct them. It's all grease lightning. I'm fighting the thoughts that are frightening the lightning. Peace to my man, Manny Faces. We do this in all places for all races. Be out here.
Thank you, my friend. We'll talk soon. Peace. Once again, my man, my mellow Yogi guy. Why? Why not show love? Why not?
Manny Faces.
You sick for this one. Sick for this one.
Once again, thanks for listening to another episode of Hip Hop Can Save America, aka the world's most important hip hop podcast. My name is Manny Faces. You can find out more about the show at hiphopcansaveamerica.com. You can watch the show now as a live stream on YouTube, hiphopcansaveamerica.com/watch. Check back for all the replays as well. The interviews from the live stream will be brought here onto the audio feed, so you always get the best of the live stream. You can also check out our Substack newsletter. It's free at mannyfaces.substack.com, filled with stories of hip-hop innovation, inspiration, and in general, hip-hop news that isn't about dumb shit. Eternal shouts to our consulting producer, Summer McCoy. Be sure to check out her dope initiatives, Hip Hop Hacks, and the Mixtape Museum. We'll be back soon with another dope episode, but check us out on the live stream as well. Mondays, 9 p.m. Eastern, hiphopcansaveamerica.com/watch. Until next time, it's Manny Faces wishing peace and love to you and yours.